Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
This show is a proud member of the On Us All Podcast Network.
How important is the Wano arc? We're going to be asking these questions and a lot more on today's episode of Systematic Geekology. We are the priests of the geeks. I'm your host, Christian Ashley. As we continue on through our coverage of One Piece, arc by arc, I'm, of course, joined today by the true emperor, TJ Blackwell. How's it going, TJ?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Excellent. So, TJ, what have you been geeking out on recently?
It's kind of, well, I've really just been working. I've just been working like crazy. Breaking Bad. I think since the last time I was asked this question, I watched all of Breaking Bad for the first time.
I know you'd started it. I didn't know you'd finish. What are your thoughts?
So good. Unbelievable. I hate it when everyone is right.
And yeah. Like, oh, why haven't you watched it yet? You're in the wrong. Yeah.
Nah, I hate it when that happens.
I like Breaking Bad and the fact that it is a good show. I don't like it in the hero worship a lot of people give to Walter White. Very undeserved.
He's the villain of the story. They make that pretty clear.
From episode one. But you know what? It is what it is. You know, media literacy is all at an all-time low anyways. So that's to be expected. Me, on the other hand, I just went through another rewatch of the Venture Brothers to help me fall asleep at night because I've watched them before. And my gosh, that is one of the most tightly plotted shows in the world. One-off references that are from season one will show up in season three or five and what have you. And like, I mean, they're geniuses. They're very crass. I'm not very big on that part of it. But like when it comes to the characterizations and the world building they do, fantastic.
Yeah. And Brock Sampson.
Oh, Brock Sampson, of course. All right. So, TJ, would you like to help me go through the events of Wano from beginning to end? I know that's a heavy order.
No. Wano, I'm pretty sure Wano is longer than Dressrosa. I think Wano's the longest arc in One Piece.
It oddly doesn't feel like it is, but I think it is.
Yeah.
Comparatively speaking, I don't know what Dressrosa just had that feeling.
Oh, Dressrosa is a slog. Wano never felt like that. But it is longer.
Maybe because there was continuous action.
There's always something happening.
Yeah.
There's actually always something happening, which is great. Holy crap. There's just so much. So, the Straw Hats, you know, land on Wano. Takes a lot to get there, but they're able to do it. It is crafted sort of parallel to them entering the Grand Line. Just to have that kind of scale about it, because that's how big of a deal Wano is. So that's cool. The Straw Hats get split up when they get to Wano. And it's Luffy by himself.
Yes.
And pretty much everyone else together. Luffy and the Thousand Sunny together. Everyone else ends up together. And they kind of have to integrate it. Wano is very Japan, you know, for the first time in the series, and it has the isolationism. They're very xenophobic, at least they think so. They all kind of have to blend in. So that's how Wano starts, is with them doing that. We get introduced to, I'd say, some of the more important characters pretty early. What is her name?
Yamato.
Yeah, Tama. Luffy meets her, saves her on the beach. And she's pretty important. She contextualizes a lot of the hardships that Wano Country goes through because of Kaido. And then we get Samurai Luffy, super important to the story.
Yes.
Super important to the story. And they, the rest of the Straw Hats, get put up at arms against the Shogun, who I hate. He's Orochi, and despite the fact that he has a really cool devil fruit, he's just such a loser. You know?
Yes.
Like, he has the Orochi devil fruit. Like, he's an eight-headed dragon. He's just such a loser. He's so lame.
By definition, you'd think that would be the cool guy, but no.
No. Oda usually does a good job of, like, cool devil fruit, cool guy, but, man, he's a bum. He's awful. Wano's so long, sorry. It's been like okay. 6 years since the start of Wano. At least to me, you know, the manga readers.
Yeah. So they get into a little bit of trouble there. At one point, Luffy ends up in prison for a little bit after failing to beat Kaido, right?
Yeah.
Or is that...
That is...
Okay, yeah. And then eventually they're able to escape from that. We learn that, you know, Momonosuke and Kinemon and the rest, Kanjuro and the rest of them, you know, are actually from 20 years in the past. And whose devil fruit was it that brought them to the res?
I don't remember her name.
Was it Hiyori?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah.
I think it's her name.
Yeah, his sister?
Yeah.
I think that's it. Once again, like Kichu said, it's been a while. Yeah, and the whole idea being is, well, they're looking for us now in the current, you know, past. So if we go 20 years in the future, you know, maybe we can find a way to take down Kaido and not be as suspicious. People aren't actively seeking out for us right now. And the reason for this is that, you know, Momonosuke is, you know, in the line of Odin and is supposed to be like the rightful, you know, ruler of Wano. And, you know, there's all this thing about a traitor being in their midst too. But you know, Kinemon refuses to believe in this. And unfortunately we do learn along the way that it was Kanjuro. His whole shtick about being a poor artist is actually false, which is a pretty good reveal. I'll give it that.
It's pretty good. It's really good.
And in fact, it can draw extremely well because he's been drawing with the wrong hand, if I remember correctly, to make it look like he's a terrible artist with his powers. But his whole thing is trying to give them up so that, you know, he can get what's his, and that does not end well for him. So Kaido initially defeats Luffy. We see that Gecko Moria is back alive for a little bit, and has attacked the Blackbeard Pirates.
Yep.
Let's see.
There's a lot of little stuff that happens in Wano.
Yes.
Like there's a ton of big stuff. There's a lot of little stuff. X Drake is back in the story, which is awesome. I love X Drake. But it was to destroy Utama's village, which we don't actually get to see. We just know he did it, which kind of stinks. But I love X Drake, so I'll take what I can get. Hawkins.
Yes. The Alliance starts coming into Wano because they'd promised to help Luffy out there. We see CP0 meeting with Orochi and some machinations there with the world government. Let's see, after that, you know, there's a bunch of different battles that are happening around the area. Oh, Kid ends up in the mine, in the prisoner mine too. And this is when Big Mom shows up on the scene, but amnesiac because of falling into the sea or something like that. And the sea messing with her. Yeah. And like for a moment, it feels like she might be one of the good guys until eventually she does end up meeting with Kaido and we get the unholy, villain alliance between Big Mom and Kaido, which raises the stakes immensely considering what we saw her do in Whole Cake and what we're seeing Kaido do now. So that's really great. Let's see from there. This is when the battles really start happening on. We see everyone individually going off against different members of, you know, Wano's, you know, armed forces and other invading forces in the area. What from there?
It's just kind of hard to keep in order to me.
I mean, there's a lot.
There's a lot. It's an incredibly wide arc. There's stuff happening everywhere.
And we get some flashbacks about Odin and him. Oh, yeah, we went out of sequence with the Conjurer thing. Sorry about that. But Odin's flashbacks, of course, we are introduced to Yamato. We'll get into her in a little bit and why, you know, she's important because she is also a daughter of Kaido, but wants to emulate Kozuki Odin. And as a result, has rebelled against Daddy and joins up with the Straw Hats, but doesn't become a Straw Hat, even though a lot of people were speculating that's something that would have happened, which I wouldn't have been opposed to.
Mm-hmm. It really felt like it.
Yeah. Marco ends up fighting as well, joining up against, you know, joining with the alliance against the Big Mom and the like, because he's still got his own things with like wanting to respect Whitebeard's wishes and seeing like the next generation become important. Luffy then fights against Kaido again. And this is when we get to that moment you've probably seen memed 1,000 times over, especially when it came out with the reveal of Gear 5, which you explain how that works real quick.
So Luffy lost again. Luffy died. And then his devil fruit was like, finally. And he became Joy Boy. He's Nika. Sun God Nika. If you've listened to all of these episodes up to this point, and you don't watch One Piece, I assume you don't care about spoilers. So, yeah, it's not the Gum Gum fruit. It is the Nika Nika fruit, mythical Zoan model Nika.
Yes.
Like, it's just full Looney Tunes, wacky, zany. He's just a big, goofy guy now. Gear 5 is Bugs Bunny mode. And it rocks.
It's almost Toon Force as a power. Like, it's getting really close. It's not full-on Reality Warper like Toon Force actually is, if you pay attention to your Who Would Win, you know, nonsense and the like. But Luffy, Bugs Bunny is a great description to make things a little wackier, because one of his big things was that no matter how serious things got in the series, he'd always have a guy with rubber powers making things funny. And this is a natural evolution of that, where we learn that the devil fruit isn't what we thought it was this entire time. It ties back into the lore with Joy Boy and being a symbol of hope for, you know, to destroy oppression and slavery and the like, and make sure that people are actually can live in freedom. So Luffy ends up, you know, fighting against Kaido, doing much better this time around. Big Mom is taken down by a combined group of different, you know, pirate captains and the like.
Long Kid. Great team.
Yeah. And it's with this that they are actually able to liberate Wano from its current leadership and establish Momonosuke as, you know, the supreme leader of Wano, who then joins their alliance, officially becoming part of the Straw Hat Alliance.
Yep. That sounds about the big stuff. That sounds like all the big stuff.
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of like other things that happen.
So much.
We'll get into some of that. So like when you first finish this arc, what were your initial thoughts, TJ?
Really? It's actually over. I don't know. Wano has kind of a strange ending because of Green Bull.
Yeah.
And Green Bull just kind of shows up like right after, and then is kind of a non-issue. Looking back on it, like none of that has been retained by me. A lot of speculation about Green Bull, but it just didn't really matter in a lasting way. Surely that'll change soon, I'm feeling. But Wano is a great arc.
Yes.
Just as long as Dressrosa. Not nearly as boring. pretty much solely responsible for like the massive resurgence of One Piece fans in America because of the Toei animation switch. What's not to love? Wano is awesome. It's long. It's super important. Pretty much everything that happens is important in Wano. If not to the story at large, and at least in the arc, it's important. There's nothing here where you're like, oh, I skipped this part of Wano when I read it. Nothing. It's just so well crafted. And then, like, you know, a day or two after Wano was finished, Oda announced that, you know, well, now that the prequel is over. I can start the real story. So that was fun.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. This was, when I was reading it, one of those, it's like, okay, yeah, I'm looking forward to the next one, to the next one, because we were constantly getting either new world building or a good fight or some good character moments here, because, you know, things, I mean, it's been this way for quite some time in One Piece, where, oh, by the way, it was actually, I think, Momonosuke's mother who got the, who sent them forward in time. I was looking that up. So much is done here. We've built up Kaido for however many chapters it's been since he was first mentioned forever ago. Then you get him and Big Mom working together as a team. Like, one of those things, like, oh, they should hate each other. Well, actually, no, they kind of get along well. There's still some animosity, but, like, this is bad. Like, it was bad enough fighting Kaido, but now we have Big Mom here, too. Oh, man, ups the stakes immensely. And we continue to see these smaller victories that, you know, the Straw Hat Alliance gets, until finally they've regained a really big one here, where they have an entire nation on their side here. Love this arc a lot. So speaking of this arc, TJ, do you have a favorite moment from this arc? And why is it your favorite?
Yeah. The Big Mom, Kaido. Oh, my. No, there's so many. Oh,
there's a lot to choose from.
So many of the fights in Wano are what I would consider to be like Katakuri level, you know?
That's high praise.
There's a lot of them for me, a ton of them. Big Mom, Kaido, Zoro, Luffy, Ace, Nice, not Ace, Law, Kid, Sanji, Zoro, Beast Pirates, Queen, King. It's so good. It's so good. Favorite single moment is probably, when we, well, I mean, okay. Obviously, Gear 5.
Yes.
Hey, podcast fam. Want to stay even more connected with the show? We've got you covered. Check us out on Instagram and Blue Sky, where we're posting exclusive content and bonus videos and fun updates that you won't get anywhere else. From sneak previews of upcoming episodes to bonus content, our social accounts are the best way to keep the conversation going. Plus, it's a great spot for you to interact with other listeners and share your thoughts. We love hearing from you. When you follow us, it helps us grow and continue bringing you the content that you love. Whether it's a funny poll, a quick clip from today's episodes, or just random thoughts, you'll feel more plugged into everything we're doing. So go ahead and hit that follow button on Instagram and Blue Sky. It's one more way to be a part of the show and keep the good vibes flowing. Thanks for being a part of the family, and we can't wait to see you there.
Other than Gear 5, when we realize Law has awakened his devil fruit, and he uses it to kill Big Mom.
Huge.
Huge deal. With, you know, with Kid's help. Who cares about Kid? He dies soon anyway. You know, as far as we know. But insane moment. Absolutely insane moment. That was like, for me, other than Gear 5, that's the one. And it just shows that Luffy and the Straw Hats are not the only, you know, they're not the only pirates that are getting stronger. Everyone else is also, like, building up, becoming Yonko level.
By necessity. Like, if they don't, then they're kind of out of the fight.
Yeah, and Kid learns that the hard way. Spoiler warning. But that chapter was really funny.
Yep, I agree. I mean, I'll say it. It's Gear 5. Yeah, it's the obvious one, but it's obvious for a reason. It's been building up to this. We've all been wondering, okay, Luffy's gone up to Gear 4. What would a potential Gear 5 look like? Oh, well, it's way better than you thought it would be, because you did not understand the devil fruit. And it's not like a ha-ha, I gotcha. It's like, no, if you actually pay attention to the weirdness around what we thought the gum-gum fruit was, oh, there's something more to this. This isn't just an awakening. This is like, there's something more to this devil fruit. And no wonder why it was sought out from the very beginning of this story. No wonder people wanted it so bad. And no wonder a lot of people freaked out when he got it.
Isn't it annoying, though, that there were people like 25 years, 22 years ago or something like that, who were like, Gear 2 doesn't make sense. Rubber shouldn't be able to do that. Yeah, you're right.
Well,
it's pretty.
Yeah.
Good notice. Yeah, that's foreshadowing.
Yes. This isn't an inconsistency. He actually planned. You know, he hasn't planned out everything that's ever happened in the series, but there's some things you can tell, like, no, way back when he knew.
Yeah.
This is your, like you said, you're foreshadowing to know.
Yeah, it is special. But that's why I wanted to mention something other than Gear 5, because the awakening of Nika and Zoe is like, I can hear it. The drums of liberation. Luffy's heartbeat is the drums of liberation. Mm. And such a good reveal.
Yeah. So getting the obvious one out of the way, I actually, the first time Luffy loses in this arc is huge to me, because it was like, whoa, I wasn't expecting him to like win, but I wasn't expecting him to lose so bad he goes to prison and has to actually have an arc there, you know, breaking out. It's like, okay, I can appreciate when an author lets their main character fail, but not in like a, and everything is lost and the world sucks. It's like, no, it's a setback. It's a setback that makes sense in no context, but he's still going to get back there and get into the fight. So when he does get to the reveal of the Gear 5 and everything there, it feels way more earned.
It's so good. And it's kind of funny to think, like, what if he had killed him the first time? Like, would it still awakened as Nika? Just skip like 200 chapters right there. Mm.
Yeah, it maybe if it did, it just wouldn't have been as awakened as it ended up being. So I still think he probably wouldn't have won.
Yeah, it definitely wouldn't have been as cool, because
it wouldn't have been as hype.
Wouldn't have seen it.
Yeah,
you know, but it would have been funny.
Yeah. So how about who was the character that stood out the most to you that has previously appeared?
Law, and Marco and Zoro and Sanji and what are we doing? This is a great arc. It's really really good. But I would say Law.
Okay. I mean, that's a good one. Zoro did really well in this arc. I mean, after how many hundreds of chapters of like, oh, well, naturally, a guy who uses a bunch of, you know, katanas and the like, you would expect him to excel in a place like Wano. Well, guess what? He does. And, you know, his interactions, you know, with Hiyori, Kozuki, and, you know, saving her and like almost becoming her knight in kind of weird way. If this was a different series, this is would have been their romantic arc. But this is One Piece, and romance doesn't exist except in the past, because otherwise people wouldn't have babies to exist in the present. So he does really well. And of course, Luffy has a great showing here too. And that's what you want for your main character. It's like, oh, he suffers loss, like literal loss, multiple times over, and then comes back and dies. And then uses that to propel himself forward using pre-established lore, using new revelations that happen as a result of pre-established lore to gain the powers of Gear 5 to take down Kaido and liberate Wano. It's like, man, that's great. And I'll give a little shout out to Momonosuke too. It's like he does learn to stand up for himself more, especially when you learn the revelation that he's the older brother, technically, but thanks to shenanigans by time travel, he is now the younger brother, you know, linearly speaking, compared to his sister. And what that means for him, and all he has to do as a leader, and the whole reveal, Kondro betraying them, Kinemon not wanting to believe something like that would happen, but like his belief that it wouldn't happen actually being crucial to the fact that they win, because he gives information to Kanjuro that screws them over, the bad guys over. Like, that's great storytelling right there.
It's so good. It feels weird to say that, like, it's time for a reread of a arc this recent. Like, we're one arc removed from Wano.
Yeah,
it's going to be two arcs probably in like a couple weeks, but right now we're only one arc removed, you know? Like, it was Wano, Egghead, we're in Elbaf.
Yes.
And Egghead's pretty short.
Yeah, Egghead isn't that long.
Yeah. So the Wano is the moment. The moment. It's a long moment. Egghead's where it's really not Egghead. Wano's where it's really like, hey, it's getting serious. Actually serious. Things are getting very real, very fast.
Oh man, the revelations we get in the Egghead arc about the state of the world. Yeah.
It's a.
But not to get ahead of ourselves. So that was previously introduced. How about introduced in this arc? Who was most interesting to you?
I don't know. So all of Wano's best characters were introduced earlier.
Yes.
Like Momonosuke and Kinemon, Sanjuro even. Kaido, like, they were introduced before Wano, but they didn't really become characters until Wano.
Mm-hmm.
Most interesting introduced, probably Yamato.
Okay.
Probably Yamato. Yamato is the first time in a long time where the Straw Hats show up somewhere and make a friend, and I'm like, that'd be,
welcome
be
to cool the to
have. Yeah. Cool to have a new Straw Hat. So, like, I was a little disappointed, but it's not
it really also makes sense why she stayed behind.
Yeah. So, for me, it is probably Yamato. Yeah. And it's the story that he chose to tell with Yamato, which we'll talk about later. Very interesting for Oda to do.
Because it's been interpreted in vastly different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll actually throw out Hiyori Kazuki. I really appreciate the story of, you know, the princess who has lost pretty much everything and yet has found a way to get back into the spotlight, you know, hoping to inspire the people again. I love the nightly things that she has with Zoro as her protector there, but also like the reuniting with her brother, who once again should be, is technically her older brother, but by, you know, time travel shenanigans is not. The grace that she has in the midst of the wildness around her. You can appreciate a character like here. But I agree with your earlier assessment that most of the characters who are great here were introduced earlier in previous arcs.
Yeah, which is not a slight against Wano. There's just a lot of really strong characters in Wano.
I mean, we're at a point where there are literally over 1,000 characters in this manga. So when you get a new arc, you are going to introduce new characters, which just means you have hundreds more. But that doesn't mean the hundreds more that are added in are as good as earlier characters. They could be, but, you know, it's a lot harder to do that with people you already know.
Yeah. You've got to understand some of these characters. You introduce someone new and they're competing with a character who has had a real life person's amount of time to develop.
Hey friends, it's your pal Will Rose here. And let me break the fourth wall a moment and look directly at you through the camera. Or speak directly to you in your earbuds. Yep, I'm talking to you, Susie. You too, Chad. You can now support Systematic Geekology on Fourth Wall. That's a website. You'll find all of our episodes, incredible merch like shirts and hoodies and mugs. Chad, I would love to see you in one of those shirts out in the wild.
You get bonus episodes. We answer bonus questions. We have special shout outs. We have certain episodes that you pick. So you help us create and curate the content that we put out for the world to hear. You even get free merch.
And you can support the show at different levels. You could join at the free level. Yep, we love free members, free support. Join it. Or you could become a sidekick for as little as $5 a month. You could join the elves and dwarves for $10 a month. You become a wizard for $15 a month, or you could go to divinity school and become a cleric for $20 a month. And that's way cheaper than going to seminary, believe me. Or at $25 a month, you could become a superhero. And let me just say, we love all of our listeners, whether you support us at the free level or the superhero level. We love you. We love geeking out with you. Like, support, share the show. Love you.
Yes.
These characters are older than me.
Also, yes. Sobering fact.
You know, it's a tough market to compete in.
All right. So let's get to our villain here, our main villain, Kaido. How effective is he to you as a villain?
He is. What else is there to say? He is. I love it when it feels a lot more relevant recently, but it's a big thing in Shonen is the establishment of the strongest.
Yes.
Which, not to tire any Lobotomy Kaisen fans out there, but I think, of course, you know, I'm not going to talk about Jujutsu Kaisen because I do love it.
Yes.
But I think Kaido is a great example of that. I think he's a really fun character. He's a really funny character.
Mm-hmm.
Kaido does a lot for me as a villain. And it's also interesting to just kind of like analyze what he's all about, because so much of his character is like, man, I wish somebody could kill me.
Yeah.
But he won't just like jump in the ocean.
It's like, what's behind that idea? Because like, yeah, he has an easy way out of this as a devil fruit user. You know, the surefire way to make sure you're no longer alive. But yeah, the depressive states that he gets in are very fascinating for our main villain to go through, because he's reached pretty much the peak, the pinnacle of being the strongest. Like, who could take me down? Who could even challenge me? Like, I got everything I wanted and it wasn't enough. Like, where do I go from here? You know, taking over Wano and leading it.
Yeah.
Being a pirate, you know, Emperor Lord, like, commands respect, and yet it's not enough.
Yeah. And he even, and having him as that, as the pinnacle, helps us power scale, which I hate. I hate power scalers. But in this context, it is very helpful to let us know that Kazuki Oden, the last person who, the only person who scarred Kaido, how strong he was. And then we got to see how strong Zoro had to be to do the same. So it's really good. Kaido's strength is a great ruler, you know? It's a great demonstration of where we are now.
Yeah, I agree with that. But how about like him teaming up with Big Mom? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, that was awesome. It makes sense. They were like, they were crewmates once upon a time. So getting like to peek into that was really fun. And now we've gotten a little bit more exposition on it. But at the time, it was really fun to see like, sure. I guess they don't hate each other. Whatever. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. They're both emperors. They have their own territories to worry about, but they're both here. There's a bunch of really annoying kids that they hate. So, yeah, they'll team up. It was awesome. It's a great way to raise the stakes. Like you said earlier, it's like, okay, Kaido, it's whatever. We just did Whole Cake Island. Like, they survived Big Mom. How much worse can Kaido be? Then the answer is a good amount. And also, Big Mom is here too.
Yes.
So,
because you didn't solve that problem in the last arc. Yeah. She's still around.
Yeah.
And can cause problems. So, yeah, that's good.
I was a big fan.
Yeah, I'm with you 100% there. It's like having villain team ups are almost always fun because you get to see contrasting personalities. You know, when there's always, you know, that big crossover, like, you know, they did in the 70s with DC and Marvel, you got to see like Lex Luthor and Dr. Octopus working together, or, you know, something like that. It's like, oh, how do these two egotistical maniacs work together? And sometimes surprisingly well. And that's just like intercompany crossovers. Like, regular crossovers are great too. Like, when the Masters of Evil are formed, how do they all work together against the Avengers, or the Frightful Four against the Fantastic Four, so on and so forth. It's like, it's always good to see the contrast between your villains and your main heroes. And Kaido and Big Mom do a great job here of showcasing, yet this is where we're at right now. You're still not at our level. You may have beaten us, but you didn't do it by yourself. It took everyone working together for this to get done, which was part of the purpose of the series. They can't do it by themselves. But before that, they proved that you could do it by yourselves. So what does that mean for our heroes now? Will they ever reach where they were at? Or are they always going to be like, we have to work together? Which is a good lesson to have, don't get me wrong. But the working together for the two villains who previously didn't need to do it also nearly caused the death of everyone, pretty much, if they had, you know, not been as hampered as they were.
Yeah. Also, it says some pretty scary things about who's left. Mm. You know, from like the old guard. If Shanks decides to kill you all, you're probably all going to die.
As we shall see fairly soon. If he decides to go out against you, it's not going to be a good day. Yeah, you're going to have a bad time.
Maybe pick your battles. Maybe Kid should have listened to this episode. maybe choose your battles. I don't know.
Yep. So another thing we kind of learned here is a little bit of a little more lore on Goldie Roger and Ace, and that they previously had been to Wano in the past. Like, so what happens in a story? Why are these things so important to the now present arc?
So Gold Roger, Ace, this is where they pick up Kazuki Oden. And it serves to teach the world at large more about Wano. It serves as inspiration for a lot of our characters that we didn't know at the time. And this is Ace meets Yamato. Ace inspires Yamato to become, you know, who she is. Super important. That helps Luffy realize the scale of the world, meeting Yamato and having someone to talk about Ace with again, which is heartbreaking. And I don't remember pretty much anything Gold Roger did here.
the poneglyph he spends time researching and translating so right. they can find, I think this is when we actually hear the word term laugh tail the first time, right?
No, sorry.
I'm thinking of something else. I think this is one of the things that lead them the way to Pluton is located at.
Yeah.
As well as some things about Laugh Tale. Sorry, Laugh Tale was forever ago.
It's been quite a while. But okay. Yeah. Okay. I'm on a level. They did not abandon the Poneglyph story.
Yes.
They did not.
Robin still has a purpose.
She just don't talk about it much.
Which, to be fair, if somebody keeps things close to the chest, it makes a lot of sense, given everything that's happened to her.
Yeah. And it keeps happening to her in Elbaf.
poor girl. All right. So speaking of Yamato, one of the Yamato's motivations as a character is to embody aspects of Kozuki Oden, who, like you said earlier, had joined with the pirates earlier and now, you know, wanted to become a great leader and the like. And she is a daughter of Kaido as well, and wanting to like be rebellious against his ideals. So why does she do this? What's the controversy around it? And what are our thoughts?
She wants to be Oden because Oden stands up to Kaido. As far as I see it, that's the main drive here. And she believes that that is important. Someone has to stand up to Kaido, and if it has to be her, great. She also it's more than an inspiration. She just wants to be Kozuki Oden.
Yes.
So she makes everyone call her, just makes everyone call her a boy, and she's Kozuki Oden. And I do like the way that they do it in the story. And I like the way that the Straw Hats are just like, okay, whatever, dude. Sure. And they just, it never really is important. Like, it's not a huge matter of relevance in Wano. Just doesn't really matter. Because who cares? You know, this isn't a universe where only men can fight. So, no one cares. I do think it's really funny at the end of Wano. They're in the springs. And Kozuki is with the guys.
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
That's where Kozuki Oden would go.
Yeah, be whatever you want.
Yeah. So the big controversy, been tiptoeing around it, especially if you're on Reddit, is, and even TV Tropes has gotten into this a couple of times, is whether or not Yamato is trans. And the idea being behind that thought, it's like TJ mentioned earlier, Yamato wants to be Kozuki Oden. Kozuki Oden was a guy. So being referred to by masculine pronouns by certain characters, does that mean that Yamato actually views herself as a man? That's up for debate. I would say no, evidence being things like, you know, her Viva card always lists her as female. It's more like, it's always the idea of I want to be Kozuki Oden. And as a result of that, by proxy, Kozuki Oden was a guy. So if you're going to talk to me like that, that makes sense. But I don't think Yamato herself identifies that way, especially, you know, when we do have another trans character in this arc. We did not mention them. Is it Okiku? Okiku. Yeah. Who is male, presents female?
Yeah.
Yes. Biologically male, presents female. So, I mean, you've already got the character there. I don't know why you need to just add to the list. I just think it's more of people just wanting to have representation versus the character agreeing with them. So, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I don't care. I'm fine with that.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah, Yamato wouldn't be against it, so I don't care.
Fair enough.
Yamato wants to be Kozuki Oden. Kozuki Oden's a guy. She'd be cool with it.
Okay. Well, moving on from there, kind of touched on it a little bit, but like Gear 5, like how effective was it as a reveal for you?
Pretty much perfect.
I mean,
pretty much perfect.
I mean, you're not wrong. My only big issue was more like meta with as soon as it's revealed, people are like, yo, oh, now Luffy can take down Super Saiyan Goku, Super Saiyan God Goku, because he has Toon Force now. And it's like, TJ mentioned earlier his feelings on power scalers. I think they're a necessary evil to keep things in line. But then there are those who take it too far. Because, you know, you need to establish limits on what character is capable of doing what, you know, reasonably. And you use feats to accomplish things like that. But like, once again, it's the idea that he could, it's like, he's not even close yet. And it's just fandoms. As soon as you have a character who can do a certain thing, that's why Goku versus Superman is as classic as it is. Yeah, ever since, you know, he showed up in the 90s, and he always had early Superman influences anyways with how he showed up on Earth. So it was a natural comparison to make. So people keep making it, even though it hasn't been a Superman hasn't been a threat to him in quite some time. Ignore Death Battle because they don't know anything about that we're talking about. But yeah. So yeah, metatextually, I have issues, but like actual story, none whatsoever. Like, you know, it cost him to get here. We get a reveal about the true nature of his devil fruit, which then makes previous things go, oh, that makes more sense. He's not just a rubber man. Yes, he is, but he's also not due to the nature of the fruit. Why the world government wanted it so badly, why Shanks wanted it so badly way back when. The symbol of rebellion that comes from Joy Boy and everything there helps build up the world even better. Like, at 10 out of 10, no notes.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect.
All right. Well, TJ, you have anything else you want to talk about Wano before we wrap things up today?
There's a lot of hockey exposition here. You learn a lot about hockey, Conqueror's hockey specifically, and coding of Conqueror's hockey. Is like a weird new concept for hockey in Wano. It's cool if that's like a big thing for you in One Piece and you have read this somehow. Catch up. Read it. It gets expounded upon greatly.
All right. So, out of 10, what are you rating this arc?
10.
10. I mean, that's hard to argue against. I can't really think of anything that I'm like not super big on. Once again, it's more like out of world things that I'm not big on versus like what's actually happening in the story. So now I guess I'll just be brave and say 10. Like, 10. This is One Piece, man.
This is One Piece. Great moments from every Straw Hat except kind of Robin a little bit.
Yeah, she doesn't get too much in this one.
But the rest of them, actually all of them except her. It's pretty great.
Yeah, here's more post-battle stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So we're also going to be doing a special bonus question today. We're going to ask ourselves the questions. Would we like to live in Wano? Why or why not? If you're interested in that or any of the other questions that we do, guys, you should send some money to Fourth Wall. That way there'll be a link in the description down below. If you'd like to hear your name being shouted out, we'll get to that in a moment for those specific names. So you can hand a little money our way that way too. And the special tiers we have, we'll say your names loud. But before we head that way, TJ, do you have a recommendation for the audience to check out?
One Piece. Otherwise, Breaking Bad. It really is that good.
Okay.
It's infuriating.
It's infuriating that other people were right for so long and demanding that you be right with them.
Yeah. Really is that good.
That's high praise. No, I mentioned that I was listening to Venture Brothers Fall Asleep. Now that that's done, I moved on to a new series, and that is Adventure Time. And you know what? The first season's a little rough, but it's still great. And that is, you know, because once again, because I've watched it before, it helps me fall asleep if I've already seen something. And I can't recommend it enough. It's a little whimsical fun and a series that grows with its audience very well, I'll say. Gets a little more mature as time goes on, not in a really bad way or like, you know, grim, dark way, but like, no, actually telling mature stories. All right. So I mentioned some supporters earlier. Thank you very much to Russell Gentry, Justin Vaughn, Annette Noel, and Jeannie Mattingly. You guys are the best. But remember, we are all the chosen people, a geekdom of priests.
Hello there, listener. This is Evan Garcia, and I just wanted to jump in here to remind you and to let you know of our Facebook groups and our Discord server. These are great communities where you can post and share memes and talk with the hosts, and we have votes and some polls for future episode topics and fun interactions with our host. So just wanted to remind you that we are focused on community with you listeners, and we love each and every one of you guys listening. Thank you guys.
This is Joshua Knoll. I am one of the hosts of this podcast. I am also host a few other shows on the Anazal podcast network that this show is a part of. If you want to hear more from me, you can check out the Whole Church podcast. where TJ and I go through talking to people from various different church traditions to see what can be done to better harness church unity in the world today. You can also hear me on Be Living Water, where I talk about Taoist Christian beliefs and examine various media like the Book of Daniel and Les Miserables through a Taoist Christian perspective. You can also hear me as I do some of the voice work for the Bible After Hours, where the foul-mouthed preacher goes through the Bible from a more progressive point of view. Thank you guys for listening, and I hope you'll consider checking out these other shows on the Anazal Podcast Network.